The topic today is such a fabulous one, and I'm so glad, Charlie, you gave this one, because it is something a lot of you have been asking for. There's a lot of fear around. It's about the children. It's about, you know, spouses, work, too much. And of course, COVID is, you know, is the topic at the moment. So there's a lot of fear. And really, Brother Charlie is going to talk about how we can have a future without fear. So that's lovely. Now, I know we've got about 60% who've never met Brother Charlie, and about 40% who've joined us for the first time. So let me tell you that Brother Charlie, well, his name is Charlie Hobbs, but he's an international brother. He's Brother Charlie to each and everyone. You know, and he's a senior teacher with the Brahma Kumaris. He's been with our Brahma Kumaris for, what, 45 years or so? Yeah, and he's currently the National Coordinator of Australia, which itself has over 40 centres and 3 retreat centres. He grew up in Melbourne. He's going to tell you a little more about himself. I'll just give you, you know, just the key points. He grew up in Melbourne, and then he decided he had this urge, you know, to find spiritual truths. So he travelled around. He visited so many communities until he came to Brahma Kumaris in 1975, and he knew he had reached home. So as we say, it's all, after that, it's all history. You know, Charlie actually travels extensively over the world. He's an active member of the Brahma Kumaris International Coordinating Group. He's responsible, which is responsible for many major international projects, and he's the admin director of the BK's global network of centers. So we are so lucky and grateful to this lockdown that we, through the wonders of technology, we've got Brother Charlie. I love his angelic smile. Just look at that smile, you know, and his manner. He's got such a beautiful, easy manner of, and you know what, he connects to each and everyone. So if you haven't met him before, here he is. Over to Brother Charlie. Welcome, Charlie. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Sister Mudzi. And thank you to everyone who's come online. It's really my real delight to be able to meet everybody in this way. And so lovely that we have come together from so many corners. And I think Mudzi has really introduced me and my story. I am based in Sydney and probably spend most of my time in the BK centers around Asia. And that's right up to China and over to Sri Lanka and Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, all the places in between, which is really a wonderful part of the world. But I actually, you know, Mudzi was talking a little bit about my own journey, and we all have a journey, I think. You know how you have your life where you've been what you've done, and often when we meet people, we share that, but we have the inner journey too. And I, when I was just 20, I left Australia, and I traveled for a few years overland, and I lived in religious communities in Southeast Asia. I lived with Sikhs and Buddhists in a monastery, during Muslims during Ramadan. I spent time in India, bathed in the Ganges, lived with a yogi in the Himalayas. I went and spent time at the Dalai Lama's place in Dharamsala. Spent quite a bit of time in the Middle East, in Europe, in a Christian community. And so, you know, like all of us, I think, who come on such an event as this, you know, there's that yearning for something. Sometimes we're not even sure what that yearning is. But I think it's the yearning to know who I am and the yearning to really have a deep relationship with God. And so what I would really love to do today is just share a few of my thoughts about the journey of dealing with fear, because every one of us, I think, has so many fears. It's a part of life today, but a part of the spiritual journey is to dismantle a lot of those fears. And I often feel that's freedom. Real freedom is when I step out from this, all these fears I have about situations, about personalities, about my own lack of competency or capacity, and I really step into the person I know I can be. And you know, they say that there's two prime emotions, love and fear, and that all other emotions come from these two. I think all of us have experienced just how absolutely terrifying and debilitating fear can be, but we also know just how life-transforming love can be. And some say that really love is letting go fear. I step into a life of love when I dismantle my fears. And I, some years ago, I had a friend in Melbourne who used to come to our meditation center, and he had a mother, Lynn was her name. And Lynn would also come occasionally. She was a very lovely lady, but she would describe herself as a very anxious and fearful type of person. And she contracted cancer, which actually exacerbated her worries, her fears, her anxieties. And one day my friend rang me, and my friend said that Mum has been diagnosed with more secondaries, and the doctors say that she's not going to live very long. She's terminal. So I went to visit her in hospital. And I think you know how sometimes memories are recorded like a movie in, you know, the third eye almost. You can see the whole scene of the past so clearly. And I went to visit her one night about dusk, and she was at the end of a long corridor in the hospital. And I arrived at her room, and it was completely dark inside and so still. And so I just tippy-toed in, and I sat down quietly as I could, and I just sat there in this absolute silence, and there was no movement. I just sat there so quietly. Then out of the darkness, Lynn spoke, and she said to me, "Charlie, I love you." And quite honestly, that was totally uncharacteristic of this lady. And what had happened is that when she realized she wasn't going to survive, when she realized that she was terminal, it was like she said, "I've got nothing to lose. I may as well become the person I really want to be and let go all my fears." And she did that. And she became so expressive of her love. And that was a huge learning in my life, I would say, because I saw that often in life we have so many fears that we're a bit afraid to express my love, a bit afraid to be vulnerable in front of others. So we live within our fears, and often we suppress that really true personality which is sitting inside of me. And if I look at my life and what I love in my life, it's definitely the experience of love. And what I love about spirituality is that spirituality, you learn to gently observe yourself and your inner world. It's like this gentle self-education about who I am. What are my specialties? My observation of me is that when my heart is full of love, I feel so easy. You know, I feel so relaxed and accepting of myself, quite comfortable in my own skin, as they say. And definitely, I'm more loving and generous and kind to those people around me. To me, the most powerful thing in life is a loving heart. A loving heart breaks down barriers between people. A loving heart fills empty hearts. A loving heart heals hearts in pain. But at the other end of the spectrum is fear. And the millisecond fear grabs my mind, the heart begins to palpitate, the stomach turns, adrenaline courses through my system. Just as love is the seed of so much positive emotion, fear is the seed of so much negative emotion. And when fear grips my mind, you know, there's tension, there's anxiety, there's stress. And the mind starts to imagine, you know, the paranoid mind starts to imagine all these wild things that maybe can happen. I can't relax. I can't concentrate. I can't sleep. The impact of fear on my inner system. And I've actually been quite fascinated over the years to, in a way, read about the effect of emotions on the body. You know, sometimes I think we have the seen world and the unseen world. The seen world is my body. My body is the instrument that I work through. The unseen world is my thoughts and my feelings. But that unseen energy is constantly radiating through my body. And when there's constant fear going through my body, it has an effect on my organs. And if, you know, someone was to run into the room, wherever you may be, and say there's a fire, what would happen? What's the first thing that would happen? Your heart, boom, 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 instantly accelerates like that. So just imagine if every day of life I wake up, I have a fear that I will fail, a fear that I won't be good enough, a fear of a personality in my family. Maybe there's a personality who's very authoritarian or very dominating or even, unfortunately, violent. Or I have a fear of my own performance. That fear is putting constant pressure on my heart. My heart is just a little pump, and eventually it breaks down. There's been so much research that fear can cause heart attacks. Not only fear, anger as well too. And I often feel that when we really take up a spiritual life and a spiritual practice, not only do you grow spiritually, it's an investment in my health and well-being as well. And yet, when we look at our world, just in the last few months, I was in London in September, and I think I met some of the ladies who come to this group. I came in late morning, just at the end of the session. Just in, what, 6-8 months, how dramatically has our world changed? And you know, sometimes I think, you know, we sit at home and we have that little screen in the corner of our lounge room, the TV. We watch. It's like a window into our world. We travel to all these corners. And so often we see so much of our world where the streets aren't safe, the homes aren't safe. Nowhere is safe. Nowhere is safe. And the poor brothers and sisters of our human family are constantly living with fear, anxiety, violence, all this sort of stuff. We know the world in which we're living. But that's the big picture. My, you know, we all have our own individual set of fears, I can say. And, you know, a part of the spiritual journey is coming to terms with those, understanding their roots, and starting to work with them to, you know, dismantle their influence over me. And, you know, even I would say, you know, when I first started to teach, you know, one of the greatest fears of most people is public speaking. And, you know, I once read on the internet that there was a question, would you prefer to speak in public or swim in a tank of sharks? Guess what? Some people chose to swim with sharks because, you know, when we stand in front of people, we feel vulnerable. You know, that people are seeing me, seeing through me, seeing my weakness, this sort of thing. That's a big fear. You know, one of the greatest fears for most of us is the fear of rejection, the fear of not being loved, the fear of not being accepted. And this is such a common fear. I would say once I've done, or quite a few times I've done workshops, and I would say when you talk about fear, the main fear for most of us is that fear of not belonging, the fear of not being accepted, the fear of not being loved. This is deep in the human psyche we have that fear. But I've also have a friend who was living in Germany for a while, who was a concert pianist, beautiful piano player, and he told me an interesting thing. He said that actually some of the best piano players in the world are no one knows, because when they perform live, their fingers freeze up. They can't play. And so no one really knows them. And so, you know, we all have our own individual sets of fears. Sometimes some of us have fear of authoritarian figures in our lives. But what is fear? What is fear? I would say fear is an emotion experienced in anticipation of danger, evil, or pain, whether real or imagined. Fear is an emotion experienced in anticipation of danger, evil, or pain, whether real or imagined. And you know, in the long time ago, psychologists, scientists used to believe that fear was genetic. You inherited it from your family. But I think the science world and the spiritual world have come together, that fear is based on past experiences. I have an experience in the past, it overlays and influences my response or my feeling to that situation in the present. And once I was sent one of those little viral videos, you know how people send you all this stuff, and to be honest, I don't watch a lot of that. But I watched this one. It was of a little girl in Calcutta. And this little girl wasn't even walking. She was that young. And she was in front of a king cobra who was above her face, you know, with their flared face. And obviously the poison was taken out of the cobra. And the little girl was sitting there, and the cobra was above her doing this at her face, attacking her face. And this little girl had a smile on her face. And after a minute or so, she started to go like this at the cobra as it was going like this at her. And it did that for a while. And finally, the video shows the snake, the cobra, backing off, and the little girl crawling after the cobra. It was just amazing, because why it was so incredible, she had no registered fear of that. Often we educate our children, don't go there, this is that, don't do this, this is that. We actually build fear into their lives. And maybe we feel, well, we have to be cautious, it's a very dangerous world. But also, you know, we have a fear of outcomes, a fear of the future. And actually that is really what anxiety is. Anxiety is when the mind starts to play all those games. Maybe this will happen, maybe that will happen. You know how the mind creates all these scenarios. You know, once I was in South Africa, and I was actually giving a talk, and someone put up their hand and said, how much fear is real and how much is imagined? My answer was, I wouldn't have a clue. You know, but I said, I think about 90% might be imagined. And then this person who asked me the question said, well, I Googled it. And as you know, God is Google now. Everything is lies on Google. And he said, the research I read said 93% of our fear is imagined fear or anxiety. In other words, out of 20 times I'm fearful, 19 are my own creation. I, because of my past experience, I overlay on the present and I start to feel afraid or anxious of what might happen or the outcome in a situation. And this is why I think what I love about the spiritual journey is that we start to look in a very practical way that a part of human life today is we all have many fears and many anxieties. That's the reality, whoever we are. But as we really step deeply on the spiritual journey, we can start to be less influenced. You know, the power of these fears can reduce. And I want to talk about three types of fears from a spiritual perspective. And the first, I would say, are physical fears. And I would say these are like fears of loss of wealth, loss of possessions, material things, fears of loss of health, illness, old age, these sort of fears. And at the heart of physical fear is the fear of loss. And probably at the heart of the fear of loss is the ultimate fear of the fear of death, which is the fear of the loss of my body. But in my experience, it's not just the fear of the loss of my body, it's the fear of the loss of my reputation, my image, my, you know, successes in life, my attainments, my achievements, all this sort of stuff. And you know, sometimes when I look at the way we construct life, we're born and, you know, we start to identify, you know, this is my family, this is my brothers and sisters, this is the city I was born in, this is the country, these are my friends, and then as I grow up, this is my career, and this is my partner, this is my children, this is my home. You feel this incredible network I build around myself. I identify. In 1 second, I'm going to leave that. And this is probably the ultimate fear of most of us. It's we invest in this whole identity for 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years. And then in 1 second, that identity goes. And this is why I would say that, you know, at the heart of fear is that fear of loss. Whenever I attach my heart to anything temporary, I build fear into my own life. And yet, the paradox is because we feel so insecure today, I attach my heart to everyone and everything because I feel insecure. The more I do that, the more fear and insecurity I'm building back into my life. That's the paradox. And actually, once I was where Mudvi is living, you know, in the Global House in London, I didn't know, it was a long time ago. I'm not very good at dates, but I'd say 25 or more years ago. And John Cleese came. And you remember John Cleese from Monty Python. I think many of you will remember. And he came to give a talk. And he came out, he was in the Global Auditorium in Global Cooperation House, the BK headquarters in London. He came out on stage and everyone began to laugh. It's John Cleese, it's Monty Python, and he's such a brilliant comedian, one of the greatest of last century. But he came to speak about impermanence. And it was really profound, actually. And what I really found was that as he was doing that, he said, I'm just putting up my volume because I noticed that someone wants me to put up my volume. But what he said was that life is like a train journey. And, you know, a train stops at a station. People hop on, people hop off. The train goes to the next station. People hop on, people hop off. That keeps happening. Eventually, you hop off the train. The train is life. People come into your life, people go out of your life. Possessions come into your life, possessions go out of your life. Roles, responsibilities come into your life, they go. Ultimately, I can't hold on to anything. Wisdom is to love life, love people, love the roles and responsibilities. But the second I attach my heart, instantly I build the fear of loss into my life. And I would say the great wisdom of spirituality is to love everything, enjoy everything, have a passion for life, but learn how not to become dependent within that. And you're saying, I can hear it. I can hear it through the internet. Well, that's easy to say, but we are so conditioned to be dependent today. I'd say the human nature of today is to be very, very dependent. And so I would say the first step in dealing with fear, to create a future with less fear, if I can say that, is to understand there's nothing but change happening. That is the nature of life, change. As soon as I try to hold on, that's when I lose wisdom and I will suffer. I build fear and insecurity into my life. The second step, I would say, towards a future with less fear is to begin to understand what's permanent in all this change. What is permanent? And because we've identified with this seen self, I see this body, this is who I am, but this is temporary. The unseen self is permanent. And this is really the first step to start to really have a deep impact on my account of fear, is to begin to know and experience my permanent self. And when I look inside, I feel that there's three personalities that sit inside all of us. Two of them build a lot of fear into my life. Two of them are constantly building an account of fear inside. One of them starts to help me reduce. The first personality takes its whole sense of identity from my temporary body. Its whole sense of self is based on this temporary, the labels of my body, a male, an Australian, all those labels of my temporary self. I call it the eye of arrogance or the eye of superiority. And when this eye rules my inner system, I compare with others and I think, I am better, I know more, I am right. And when it comes into my feelings, that's when I feel so easily insulted, disrespected, not valued, excluded, sensitive. And so whenever I feel those feelings, to me, I know I'm being deceived by my ego. My ego is deceiving me. There is a deep relationship between ego and fear. And that basically says, as much ego as I have, that's how much fear I have. And when I have ego, I fear that people see through my facade and they'll see I'm not that confident. I don't have so much self-love. I fear that I won't live up to the expectations that others have of me. I build this image of myself and I fear that maybe they'll realize that I'm not as good as I look. So whenever there's ego, I build fear into my life. But the second eye is the flip side of ego. This eye is the eye of inferiority or the eye of lack of self-respect. And this eye also takes its whole sense of identity from my temporary self. When I think I'm a temporary body, the two children are my ego and my lack of self-respect. And this second child is the dominant child that's absolutely dominating my life at the moment. This sense of deep inferiority. And when this eye is ruling my inner world, this eye thinks, you know, others are better, others know more, others are right. Then others don't love me, others don't value me, others don't respect me. And when it comes into my feelings, that sense of hopelessness, unworthiness, feeling inadequate, inferior, depressed, I would say all these feelings are so powerful inside. And this is the eye that feels failure. This is the eye that fears rejection, fears that people won't love me or accept me. And I almost have so much fear that I almost create that reality. I hold that belief in my head. People won't really love me. People won't really accept me. And that fear means it often becomes a reality. And so my ego and my lack of self-respect build so much fear into my life. And they are the seeds of most of my fears that's recorded within me. But the third eye is the eternal self, the original self. I, the eternal soul. And all of you know that when you come to the B case, inevitably, we're going to talk about the soul, because it's a lifelong education. I often feel out there we go to university and we study and we know so much information. But here, we take one idea. Who am I? And I go deeper and deeper and deeper. It's like internal research to transform this knowing into an experiencing. So it becomes absolutely real. My experience that when I started to experiment with the idea that I am this minute spark of non-physical energy that sits in the front of the brain around the pituitary gland. I enter when there's movement in the womb, when the quickening begins, which is the medical term in the womb. That's when the soul enters. That's when I came. And then when I'm born, I take on this whole identity and I invest in this. The soul has no gender. The soul has no nationality. The soul has no culture or even religion. This all comes with my temporary self. The more I say, I am this, and I identify, if that identity is insulted or disrespected, or I'm attached to it, I actually feel fear of losing that identity. And so I spent this whole life building this whole persona, this whole sense of self, and that's when so much fear of loss of that really emerges. And I think that when I begin to practice the eternal self, that I am an eternal soul, the most inevitable thing in life is that, you know, I'm going to continue on. I'm going to pass from this body. Actually, death is the most natural thing of life. And yet we've created a culture of so much denial around death. I have a friend in Sydney that I actually, he's a medical scientist. He's a very interesting person. And once I was with him and we were talking about this wonder that I'm an eternal soul, just this point of consciousness. And you know what he said to me? He got his hand, he banged it. He said, it feels solid, doesn't it? I said, yes, it feels very solid. And he said, scientifically, it's 99.999% space. And he said, in a way, your body is like a hologram. The soul sits here and the soul expresses through this hologram. The soul sees through the eyes, hears through the ears, speaks through the mouth, acts through the body. But it's not me. And, you know, when we really begin to see that this body is a wonderful thing, but it's my temporary self. And the more I attach myself, my heart, I build this a massive amount of fear of loss. Fear of loss of my body, loss of the relatives of my body, loss of the image of my body, loss of the possessions of my body, loss of the reputation. And really, when I can start to dismantle that fear, how do I feel? I feel so light. You know, unfortunately, our poor world, and I really mean that, we are all, you know, in a part of this virus, which is just seems to be growing and growing in most parts of the world. And what's fueling it? What's fueling this shutting down the world, shutting? It's fear. It's ultimately the fear of death. And yet spirituality says death is the most natural part of existence. I, the soul, can never die. I will continue. but I carry forward my actions. So the first fear is really what I would say is physical fears. And the first, I would say, way of dealing with those fears is to understand there's nothing but change happening. The second, to know and experience my permanent self. The third set of fears, the second set of fears is psychological fears. And these are mental fears of change, of failure, emotional fears of not being loved, rejection. But there's something that psychology calls phobias. And psychology often refers to them as irrational fears. Why? Because they really weren't sure why they developed. If you Google them, there's like nearly 400 aspects or different types of phobias. There's claustrophobia, where the fear of confined spaces, aviophobia, which is the fear of flying. So many different phobias. And once I was in one of our retreat centers here in Australia, and the Brahma Kumaris have three beautiful retreat centers, and one is in the mountains behind Sydney, the Blue Mountains. It's 132 acres in a World Heritage Area. It's magnificent, and it has a waterfall, and it's just an incredible property. And once there was an Australian guy, an electrician, who came to do some work, and I met him, and he was looking, and he said, as he looked at this waterfall and this environment, he said, wow, this is so beautiful, but I wouldn't want to live here. And I thought, well, that's strange, you know. He's saying it's so beautiful, but I don't want to live. And I said, why? He said, spiders. I'm an arachnophobiac. An arachnophobiac is someone who has the fear of spiders. And, you know, phobias, in fact, are directly connected to past experiences. And these are fears, phobias are fears directly connected to my past life experiences. And so I have an experience in the past, and it overlays and affects my present. If as a child I'm bitten by a dog, for the rest of my life often I'll be wary of dogs, even if the dog is this big, tiny, a little bit of anxiety. The second I see through my eyes, I see the dog, fear emerges. So what's the process? It's like, you know, I see a scene and I go back to the recordings in my subconscious. And my recordings tell me to be wary, to be fearful. Another common fear is not really feeling love and belonging as a child. It's a very common thing, unfortunately. And so some people, whenever they enter a relationship, have this fear. Will it last? Will this person continue to love me? I can't tell you, it's probably the most common fear that most people have, that I will be rejected, that people won't continue their love for me, and this sort of thing. And so when we go deeper into the soul, this point that I was saying that sits in the hologram, the consciousness, the I that really has no real labels, when I go deep into that, it has three aspects. The soul is really an overname for the mind, the intellect, and the subconscious. So the mind collects the information of life through the sense organs. What I see, what I hear, what I taste, what I smell is thrown up on the screen of the mind instantly. The intellect is like that part assessing that information. And the intellect makes a decision. Just as at the moment as I'm speaking, your intellect is listening and thinking, I agree with that. Yes, I really like that. I don't agree with that. That part of you assessing at every millisecond of life. Then you make a decision, your intellect, on the basis of the information thrown on the screen of the mind, you decide to do something. You do an action. It leaves an impression in the subconscious. So in my subconscious, I carry my entire past recorded in my memory track. So many of those recordings are of wonderful experiences of love, belonging, but also recordings of fear. There are recordings of fear and recordings of phobias. And that's why in this life, you may have come into a situation where you just feel instantly tense. And there's no logical reason, because your husband, your wife, your kids, whoever you're with, they're not afraid at all. But you feel instantly uncomfortable. You know, sometimes some people find it so hard to express their opinion. They're afraid to express their view, say anything, often because they've lived in a culture where perhaps as a woman or whatever, they were never asked their opinion, or their opinion wasn't really wanted. And so we learn not to. And so to express is not an easy thing. For some people, they do it without thinking. Other people, they really feel afraid to express an opinion or a point of view, and the fear that other people will not accept me. You know, so there's so many fears that are actually recorded in my subconscious. And this is why that when you come in front of a situation, sometimes you feel relaxed and sometimes fear will come. Why do we meditate? Why do I meditate? Three main reasons. First, I learn to relax in the present. I feel there's no greater skill than to sit down and use my thoughts to move into the awareness of the eternal self. And the more I experience the reality of myself as the permanent self, this little point, this soul, it releases the fragrance of peace into my mind and my system automatically. You don't have to try to be peaceful. All you have to do is experience who you are, and the automatic byproduct is you'll feel peaceful. The second reason we meditate is to clear the backlog of unfinished business in my subconscious. So all these stories I carry, the fears of past experiences, whether it's rejection as a child, the dog, whatever, which are overlaying and influencing how I behave and how I interpret life now, the meditation has the power to start to clean up that story. So I'm freeing myself from my past fears and my past stories. The third reason I meditate is because I want to do such actions to create a positive future. And that's why we meditate in the morning, because when you sit in the morning and you have an elevated awareness, you feel deep peace being a soul. You may connect with God and feel that love. And then what happens is that that is the seed of your actions, interactions, and behaviors. So you meditate in the morning, you have this elevated awareness. Throughout the day, your attitude, your behaviors, your actions are coming from that elevated place. So the reason, one of the main reasons we meditate is to absolve or clear all my past stories. And so I think that another reason that we are meditating is that, you know, to deal with really, I would say, the fear of authority figures too. Because, you know, first way of dealing with fear, that there's nothing but change taking place. The second thing, to experience my eternal self, my permanent self, that's to let go the fear of loss. The third is really that I'm on a journey and I'm carrying a story in my subconscious. And a lot of that story is impregnated with past experiences of fear that are overlaying and affecting my present. The fourth one is really, I think, in relationship. And, you know, so much of our life is dealing with people. And we know that sometimes we have great fear of authority figures in my life. As a child, that can be parental. in the workplace that can be embossed, in the family that can be a partner, you know, and we have the fear of these people. My own experience is the more I learned that I'm the soul, and I not only learned it and believe it, and I start to experience, as I go about my life, the more I became soul conscious, automatically I began to see others as souls. So you see beyond their labels. So rather than seeing someone as an authority figure, someone as a boss, someone as this or someone as that, I start to see them as a soul. When I see the body, I position myself as superior or inferior. I compare my labels with your labels, and I think I'm better or I'm worse, I'm inferior. And often with that inferiority, the fear of your decisions and the fear of your influence on my life, etc. And so I would say even that fear to do with relationship is that even starts to go as well. So the first type of fears were physical. The second, these psychological ones. The third, I would even perhaps call spiritual fears, if I can. The fear of the unknown, the fear of God, the fear of my past actions, the influence, the effect, the fear of my own dishonesty. Because if I've been dishonest, then sometimes that I fear that that will come to play in my life again. And one of the laws of spirituality, as you know, this amazing universal law, which is accepted in the material world and the spiritual world, which says for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So when I perform actions, I'm going to reap the fruit of my actions. If I transgress these universal laws, often I will fear the repercussions. And, you know, once I was running a seminar in a country, and this country was referred to, which I never liked the title, to be honest, a third world country. So the people there was some people who worked for the government, and I was running a seminar. And it was a three-day live-in retreat. And on the last day, one of the participants asked to speak to me, and he said that I live in fear, constant fear. And I said, why? He said, well, I didn't earn much in my job, and I wanted to give a good education to my family. So I wanted my children to go to the UK and study, and I took bribes, and for many years I took bribes, and my children went to London, they have a good education, they have a good life, but I ruined my own life. And I said, why? He said, I'm terrified that my community will find out what I did. And so sometimes when we transgress my own values, my own principles, I build so much guilt and even shame into my own life. And that's why I would say another step to dismantling fear is to be absolutely honest. Not just with other people, but with myself. Be honest with myself. Because I would say that really, you know, how do I really shift from a life based on fear to a life where I'm liberated, or I'm beginning to really liberate myself from all these chains of fear? Because they're like chains, they hold you down. They don't allow you to be really happy in the present. And I would say that shift is shifting my whole foundation from that which is temporary to that which is permanent. The more I base my life on, if I can say, my temporary bodily image, my temporary relationships, my temporary titles, my temporary wealth, the most inevitable thing is they're going to go. I cannot hold on to them forever. Spirituality says, shift your foundation to that which is permanent. What is permanent? I, the eternal soul, and the relationship with God. That is the only permanent relationship. My own experience is that when I really lay the foundation, that my foundation of who I am is the eternal soul, and this sense of belonging to the lover of the soul, to God, a real relationship, not imagination. When that foundation is there, I begin to enjoy life and the change in life. I start to see the most inevitable thing is that life means change. I'm on the train, but I'm going to enjoy the people who come into my life. I'm going to enjoy the roles and for the wealth. But all the time I know at some point they will go too. But I can still really enjoy it. And I would say the real way to get the power to maintain this attitude, this fearlessness, is the relationship with God. And for me, it's the absolute foundation of my life. And you know, I had so many fears when I started with the VKs. I would say so many of them have dissipated and some of them are still there, but much, much less than they used to be. So I feel more relaxed about myself, feel more relaxed. And especially in these times of incredible change, then you have a perspective, because you know, anxiety levels at the moment are exponential. The human mind, the collective human mind, is terrified of the outcomes, not just as far as the economy, all the change. And that's where it's so important to invest in that which is permanent. And this relationship with God, to me, you know, I've been through so many phases in my life. I've been an atheist, I've been an agnostic. And now the foundation of my life is this relationship. And in the early morning, I sit as a soul. I just become soul conscious. I move beyond all these labels. And I love it. I just feel so light. And I look through the eye of the mind and I meet my lover. It's not my imagination. I'm actually connecting with a real living soul, not an image, not a belief, not an intellectual idea. I'm connecting with a soul. This soul doesn't have a body. This soul is beyond fear. This soul is beyond the action and reaction of life, but a real soul, the supreme soul, God, the divine, whatever you like to say, a real being. And what I begin to do, what I'm educating myself to do, is to remember the divine. Because what I've really been observing recently is that the intellect is always remembering. At every millisecond, the nature of your mind is to remember. And when you remember, the first thing, you connect with what you remember. The second thing is you're influenced by it. The third thing is you download a feeling into your mind. So when you remember a relative you love, you're influenced by that love, you feel good inside, you download that feeling. But if you remember a relative you're in conflict with, a relative who's treating you badly, the instant you touch that thought, you are influenced by that negative feeling and you feel heavy, you feel unhappy inside. So how are we living our lives? Constantly the intellect darting and connecting to sources that are often unhappy sources. I'm plugging into these negative sources. I'm influenced by them. I'm downloading all this unhappiness into my life. And unfortunately, we're often addicted to this sort of thing. Because often we plug into our problems. We plug into our fears, anxieties. We plug in and then we're constantly downloading this unhappiness, this fear, this worry into the sacred space of my mind. What we learn here in the VKs is to plug into the divine. And when I plug into the Supreme Soul, this real lover of the soul, you start to be influenced by love, by peace, by purity, by power. And you start to download those feelings into your mind. You feel so loved, so peaceful. It's absolutely real. And you begin to work out, the more I remain connected there, the calmer, the more peaceful I feel. The more I remain connected to the future, fear. To the past, you know, also fear of the repercussions of that, or anger even, about how things have turned out. The more I remain connected to people, all mixed emotions. Really, this life is just going about my life. Actually, I feel sometimes these days, if I say that I want to meditate, you know, sometimes people feel that's really hard work, really hard work, you know, sitting down and trying to elevate my thoughts. But if I just remember, it's the most natural thing. There is nothing more natural to your mind. All you're doing is refocusing what you remember from the past, from the anxiety of the future, from difficult relationships. I practice remembering God. And you know what happens? The more you do that, you get power. So that when you start to remember your old fears or worries, you have the power to pull back. The power to put a full stop to those sort of thinking. And really, you start to release yourself from this inner world of fear and anxiety. So I'm watching the time, and Sister Madhvi said to me at the beginning that she would ask a few questions. So, yeah, we can stop and have a few questions.
First of all, Charlie, I've got to say to you, people have just been writing in saying it's so amazing. You've covered most of the stuff so beautifully. It's very complete. So thank you so much for that. But yes, as we said, there are a few questions. The first one is from Poppy, and it's something that you mentioned, so I'll bring that up first. She's saying, you said the soul is located in the center of the forehead. Please explain.
Thank you, Poppy. It's a really interesting.
Beg your pardon, that's Heidi. Heidi. Poppy's question's coming afterwards.
Okay, Heidi. Thank you, Heidi. You know, the soul is non-physical. And the incredible thing is that life is a marriage of the non-physical with the physical. But because we've become so body conscious, we only see the seen, the physical. And that's who we identify with being who we are. When you think, your mind comes here. When you, you know, you really dwell on something, you furrow your brow, etc., because the consciousness is the soul. The whole awareness is actually the soul. And when a soul leaves the body, it's a dead body. And so the soul sits really in the front of the brain. And we would say that, you know, birth, as I was saying, is when you enter the womb, the quickening begins. And even we would say that the soul, when it takes rebirth in the womb, thinks about its past life. And actually, the soul often thinks, I want to do it better next time. But when I'm reborn, I start to go back into my old body conscious ways. You know, I did a film in Australia with a man who's made a whole series of films on reincarnation. He's a hypnotherapist. And he said he's spoken to numerous children who will tell you, I used to live here, I was this, I did this, you know, so clearly, I died in this way. But actually, you know, I remember he was even saying to me that one little boy, he would say to his mum, Mummy, I used to be your daddy. And all the family thought that was so hilarious. They would laugh and laugh and laugh. But when he became rather adamant, they then became worried. What's wrong with him? And they took him to this psychotherapist, this hypnotherapist, and he regressed him. And actually, he was her father. And this often happens. We take rebirth near the people that we have been close to. This is a whole nother story, and perhaps I shouldn't get into too much of this, but it's very fascinating. But the soul sits on the throne of the forehead, around the pituitary gland in the front of the brain. That is the seat of the soul in the body.
Thank you. That is really good. Yes. Okay, so very quickly, we've got loads of questions here. Before I go further, everyone's asking about the recording, but please, sisters, you need to be on my mailing list. I will put down my email for Wands, as well as my WhatsApp number. Please feel, write to me there, and I will explain the process. The recording doesn't come out for another 4 to 5 days. So when it is, if you are on the list, you will be sent it automatically. Okay, right. There's one sister here who doesn't want to disclose her name. She's saying, I have no fear of actually dying, but I'm really scared of illness and the suffering that may come along with it, because I've seen my parents go through a lot of pain. Any tips?
Yeah. it's a, you know, I think that we have past life experiences or past experiences where we have suffered, and that's why we have our own particular set of fears. Other people have no fear of that, but a huge fear of death. And so that's why we have our own individual fears. You know, when you go deep into spirituality, you have a completely new perception of life. And you begin to understand, I am a soul. And even though my intentions are the best, I have become body conscious. So that means I have outstanding debts. They're like inaccurate actions based on falsehood. When I thought I'm just a temporary body, and these recordings are in my subconscious. And so these are the things that fear illness and fear so on. But I would say that the more I begin to meditate and become a soul, you start to at least develop a method to manage that fear of illness, of being unwell, etc. Someone said to me recently a very interesting thing. In the old days when you got really sick, you just passed on and took another body. These days they keep you alive in these really unfortunate ways sometimes. You sit in hospitals and, you know, you just got tubes all through you for months and months, and it's really, you know, and it's, I would say, and it's, I mean, it's a huge question, but the culture of the modern world is to prolong life at all costs. Because I think we're in denial of the nature of existence, that we're eternal souls, but we take these temporary cars. But these cars won't last forever, so we have to leave them and we take a new car. It's the most natural thing of life, to die and be reborn. But the more we're in denial of that, we've created this culture which we see around us at the moment.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. So there is this other message from a mother. She's saying, I have a disabled son. I'm a single parent, recently diagnosed with cancer. I'm really worried about his future safety. It's not attachment, but I'm scared. There's nobody else to look after him. How do I overcome this?
Yeah. You know, these are incredibly challenging things, but you know what I feel is that when I have the faith in my good actions, my good karma, and that I've brought up my son in that way too, that, you know, he will be cared for. In a sense, you almost have to give him to God and he will be cared for too. Because, you know, I really feel some people feel fearful of the future, but we can create our own future by my good actions. When I do actions according to my truth, when I do actions based on the awareness of the self and God, these actions are the most, they're blue chip investment in my future. There's no more positive investment. And the more you live like that and you help your son like that, his future will be okay. But it's a part of life that each soul has their own destiny. And, you know, often I think I've seen families, you know, such lovely parents. And they have four or five children, and four out of the five may be lovely kids, well adjusted, but one is not. One is never happy right from the beginning. And I'm sure you all know this sort of scenario may have happened to you. And sometimes the parents blame themselves. What did we do? Why is this child so difficult or unhappy? But I would say there's two influences on a child. One is the family. It has a huge influence. But the second is its karmic story. It's the story sitting in the subconscious of the soul. And sometimes the karmic story is so powerful that it's more powerful even than the love and care of the family. And that's when, once again, we have knowledge, we begin to understand why things happen. And sometimes we just have to accept that some people have their own part in life. It may not be our values, it may not be our principles, they may not behave in the way we like, but, and they may even be my children. But even though I've tried my best to be a good parent, they have their own destiny. And that's, I think, one of the biggest lessons to learn, that you'll give love, you'll give guidance, you'll do everything, but ultimately, that soul has their own destiny. And in a way with this child too, that you've given him love, you'll give him support, you'll teach him good actions, good behavior, but that soul has its own destiny. And in a way you have to accept that as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. Actually, we've got loads of very personal questions. I've just been rereading your question, Poppy, and I think if you don't mind, Brother Charlie, can I send that to you later, because I think that would be better. Okay, let's just go through a couple of quick questions. Palak is saying she's always worried about her karma affecting her family. And one other, Sim is saying, why does the mental mind have the ability to analyze and rationalize how you're feeling by the emotional mind struggles and perpetuate situations as fear, anxiety?
You know, I think that one of the beautiful qualities of the intellect is to analyze, you know, but I think we've lost control of it these days. We can't stop analyzing and processing. You know, it's almost like we are permanently analyzing other people, their behavior, why they do this, permanently analyzing the world situation, or permanently analyzing, processing me, my reactions. And unfortunately, often in a very negative light, the way I see myself. And, you know, I think that one thing I've learned a lot in this life is to accept more, rather than this chronic self-analysis that we go through. Sometimes we just have to accept. And also I think that the more I begin to know myself, I have power over negative emotion. Otherwise, we're just a victim. Something happens, instantly anger comes out. Something happens, instantly hopelessness comes out. And I feel it just takes me over, like I bow down. I'm a slave to my emotions. You know, the more you don't really have to worry about the emotions, the more you build the power back through self-respect. And I would say knowing myself step by step, slowly. I wouldn't ever promise it's fast. You rebuild your relationship with yourself. You rebuild your self-value so that people and situations don't constantly make you lose your self-value. When I started my BK life and I began to realize that, you know, life means you'll be criticized. People will criticize you. It doesn't matter. What matters is that if I lose my self-respect when I'm criticized, life means failure. We fail at some things. What matters is when that failure makes me change my sense of value of myself. Life means we make mistakes. That's okay, but what matters is when those mistakes make me feel bad and I put myself down. This whole spiritual life is rebuilding my sense of self-value so that external things, people, behaviors, opinions, environments, atmospheres, don't constantly make me change how I feel about myself. Really, this has been my experience. I'm not perfect, but it's a massive change. I don't feel I'm dancing to the tune of the external world, people and their opinions and ups and downs. I feel stable. And when you feel stable in that way, I think you can manage all the challenging situations that, you know, we're faced with. And so you don't spend hours processing life. You don't spend time battling with negative emotions. It's like that you take back your own self-respect and therefore your inner power to manage these things.
That's lovely. Okay. Question on soul. The sister's asking, I'll get back to that, but she's saying, are all souls not different? Some are brighter than others?
Yes. It's a fascinating question that we are all different. And I would say that's one of the biggest lessons in life, to accept difference, even in my own family. Sometimes we say, I love all my family, but I want you to behave in this way. In my family, this is the way we do things. And yet, often that is a message to people that they feel they're not really loved, they're not really accepted. They have to please you to be accepted. I think true love is when I accept people as they are, especially today. I think the gift, the biggest gift to others, is to accept them as they are. And you know, ironically, when you love them and accept them as they are, they change. When you're constantly correcting them, even mentally, you mightn't say much, but you know, I wish you would do this, I wish you wouldn't behave like this, I wish you were like this. They feel that. They feel that energy, and it's a distance from their hearts when you know, we really give that sort of vibration or energy to other people. I'm going to go back to Madhvi. Can you repeat the question, please, Madhvi? I've gone off track.
I've already scrolled on. It was just about, you know, are all the souls like brightness? You know, are they all different?
Yes, they are. You know, and I would say that how can I put it? The human soul is like a little battery. Some batteries have absolutely run out of power. So at this time, everything disturbs them. Everything upsets them. They get hurt and then they blame everyone. And unfortunately, there's many people like that today. Some of their battery is down, but not fully down. So they have a little bit of light. They go up and down a bit, but they manage. But when you practice spiritually regularly, it's like you build back that bright light into yourself so that you're not a victim of this world. You actually take back your power again. Yeah.
Thank you, Charlie. That's lovely. There are loads of questions on souls. So what I would suggest, I think this is from lots of our newcomers, beautiful questions. But can I suggest that you write to me later? Then I would really recommend you doing a basic Raj Yoga course that we offer. But if you can write to me privately, I will then, you know, try and put you in touch with the right things, okay? So, that will tell you, okay, one sister's saying, Palak, I think she's saying that she's feeling very scared that lots of negative things she's done would affect her family.
No, I don't think so. You know, we're, unfortunately today, one of the things of lack of self-respect, which we all have, is that deep down, you know, we feel, oh, I've done this, I've done that, but actually we're all good people. We want to be good people. We have the intent. But sometimes our weakness means that the weakness takes over the intent. So I get angry with the people I love. I may be put down. Maybe I've been a bit dishonest because of my desires, my greed or whatever. But actually, I think be very merciful with yourself. I think that's the part, what I've learned in this journey. You know, we all have weaknesses. And, you know, I often see people have so much beauty, have a few weaknesses, and all they do is beat themselves up about their few weaknesses. They can't see anything good in themselves. And that's when you remain weak and you can't move forward. The more you start to reawaken your value. How? Through knowing who you are and feeling this relationship with the divine, with God. Your own value starts to come out. You start to feel okay about who you are. And you start to see, yes, maybe in the past I made a few mistakes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to apologize if I have done that to anyone. And then also I'm going to meditate. And the meditation actually changes the behaviors that create those mistakes. It reprograms my subconscious so I won't do the mistakes in the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would forgive myself, honestly. Often we're so hard on ourselves, so hard on ourselves. You know, if you look in your heart, you want to be a good person. You want to love people. You want to be kind. But sometimes our habitual patterns take over. And this is why we want to be on a spiritual journey, to get my power back so my habitual patterns don't take me over. And then I get angry and I yell at the people I love, etc.
Lou, so thanks for that. There are bad people, one of the sisters is saying. Okay, let me just come down. There seem to be loads and loads of questions. Okay, so there's one sister is saying, let me just check. She wants, yeah, Tamenji. She's saying, how do you manage the fear of not being able to be of good use to others? There is a sense of wanting to be of use spiritually, but not sure what to do.
You know what I feel at the moment, the greatest service you can do is through your mind. And you know, I'm discovering every day that, as I've been saying, the scene is the body. You can see my body now on the screen and you can see all the labels of this body. But the unseen has the real effect. And when your unseen world, when your mind is in love with God, the frequency of your mind will fill the atmosphere with love, with respect, with kindness, with forgiveness. There is nothing more useful you can give to people around you is spreading an atmosphere. Really, I would say there's no greater benefit. What is this world? It's 7.8 billion souls, the collective mind of humanity, pumping out negativity, pumping out anger, pumping out resentment, pumping out anxiety. And if I start to spread through my face, through my eyes, through my vibrations, this sweet vibration, this is a useful life. You don't have to say much. You don't have to say much. Really, I would say that, you know, you become an instrument of what you're experiencing spiritually and you consciously spread it. I often say your mind is like a perfume. And that perfume is spread wherever you go. There is no more beautiful life. And for me, my life, what I try, my aim is to be in love with God, remember God as much as I can, and spread that feeling wherever I go, whether it's with my family, with my friends, even when I go into a shop. What energy am I giving? Even just a smile to someone in a shop or a casual thing, it uplifts. You don't often get it these days. When that smile is pure and it comes from the heart, it can do magic. We've all experienced it.
Well, I think we are experiencing that with you, Charlie. You are the epitome, I think, of that example. So there's one sister who's saying that she's Faith. Faith is saying she understands everything, but she says there is a real fear of snakes that she can't sometimes sleep. Is there karma between them, her and the snakes?
You know, I'm not a psychologist and I'm not qualified in any of these things. But, you know, we all have our own set of fears. And I would say there may have been some experience in the past that's recorded in your subconscious that makes you really apprehensive. You know, once I remember one mother came and she learned meditation in our center in Melbourne. And she had four kids and she was telling me that in Australia, because there's water everywhere, that kids learn to swim when they're like literally before they walk, they put them in the pool, they learn to swim. And three of the little children, kids love water. They take to the water like ducks, but one, every time they put her in the water, she would scream. And the mother was saying, same parents, same food, same family, same everything. But I was saying that something's recorded in her past to fear water. She's had a bad experience with water. And, you know, sometimes that some people, when they feel claustrophobic, they've had a bad experience of being confined. You know, there's all different experiences. If we had time, I've got so many stories of people in their present have fear of things that are directly connected to a past experience. But that can be resolved. That can be resolved when you meditate and you put it all in perspective. There's actually really nothing to fear of a snake, I can say.
That is lovely. I so agree. You know, because I've had fear of heights and had to overcome that. Yes, very common. Avni is saying she's got a friend who no longer wants to live. He feels suicidal. And I fear that he may attempt to end his life. And I think you already mentioned earlier about how every soul has got his own journey. But if you have anything to share on that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, if I can tell you an experience, when I first began my BK journey, I was in India and I met Daddy Prakashmani, who was the head of the BKs, an absolutely extraordinary leader, like an angel, literally. And once she was talking to a group of us from foreigners from outside of India, and she talked about suicide, and she said a very interesting thing. She said, if someone says this to you, don't be too sweet with them. Because often we think, oh, you poor thing. And we become very, she said, be firm with them and tell them, don't do this action because you will take rebirth and into a worse circumstance. And she said, actually, to be firm with them and tell them the repercussions, because unfortunately today, you know, we feel so much compassion. People are feeling so hopeless. There's an epidemic of hopelessness in our planet at the moment. And so people come to such a stage of hopelessness, they think, I want to escape, but actually they don't escape. They take rebirth. And we would say one of the worst actions is to do this to myself. And so sometimes it's best to state, you must understand that if you do this action, it will reap, the repercussions are even worse than your present situation. It's tough, it's strong, but sometimes you have to, that's tough love, you have to speak openly to that friend and say that this is not the right behavior. And you know, sometimes I think that depression is a sadness in psychology. My dream in life to be loved and valued hasn't happened. But in spirituality, it's a mourning for the loss of my true identity. I don't know who I am. And often to tell that friend, you're actually an eternal soul. And unfortunately in this time, people are, the past is really overlaying and there's a big account from the past, which is creating a lot of suffering. And that's why if we can relieve that suffering, and like the question before, I would say the more you can, through your face, through your eyes, just be an image of love, acceptance, respect, your image will uplift the spirits of such people. And if you really, in my feeling, the greatest gift you can give them, and I've seen some people, I've known some people, one man who is a scientist told me, I've been depressed completely for 10 years. When I learned who I was, my depression went. He told me. 10 years, he said, I was completely depressed. But suddenly I realized actually who I am. And that answered so many questions for him.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true. That's lovely. So the two questions are sort of sounding the same. So Namrata is saying that as she progresses in a spiritual journey, she fears making mistakes. Feels like even things like getting angry when it, you know, she's aware of that, but she feels deflated and then she starts worrying. And so the other sister saying that I understand the reasons for my fear intellectually, but am not able to bring it practically into my life. What can I do? Please help.
Yeah. You know, once Madhvi, I was with a group of people and we had a workshop, what do we need most? And actually we decided inner power. Because I know I want to change. I know I want to deal with my anger. I know I want to resolve my fears. I can see where I want to go, but where do I get the strength? And I would say, really experiment. Open your mind to a relationship with the soul that's remained ever powerful. And that's not a power of this world of domination, control, etc. It's a power of love, the power of purity, the power of peace, the power of gentleness. And really, I can only say that, you know, I felt like everybody, vulnerable, fearful, anxious. But when you practice having this relationship with God, it's like you have this injection of inner strength and willpower to actually become what you want to be. It takes time and it takes patience. That is the spiritual journey. The spiritual journey is filling the gaps from feeling weak and vulnerable to stepping back into my inner power. And that's why I often feel, you know, you can listen to these seminars. They're lovely. We enjoy it. But as soon as they stop, often we go back to our old thinking. But spiritual life is practicing from today. Practicing. And I think, as Madhvi said, if you haven't done a course in meditation, to do the basic course, you will get the tools to start the journey, to take back your spiritual power.
Absolutely. Nelly is saying she's got a few questions like this, but I think maybe Nelly, you're quite new. You probably joined us for the first time, because she's saying if there are no bad people, then there are no bad actions and no system of karma and therefore no reincarnation. I think it's probably better that, I mean, I don't know if you want to add anything, but it's better that you really get an understanding of, you know, everything we're trying to share. As I said, we do loads of courses now. They're online, and I think most of you are on mailing lists. So please look into that. It's very important. If you really want to go...
Sorry, Madhvi. One thing I would say, I don't think there are bad people, but what happens is I, the eternal soul, come under the influence of my temporary unconsciousness, which is... The more I either soul come under the influence of body consciousness, this temporary identity that breeds my ego and lack of self-respect, I then come under the influence of my desires, my anger, my hatred of people that are different. So maybe we label them as bad, but the badness has come because I've lost self-awareness. And when I take back my self-awareness, I go back to my goodness once again.
And isn't that really what an eternal soul is? You know, it's just we go through all these changes, but we were so beautiful and perfect to start with. So this is lovely. One question here is suicide written in your destiny? It's from Cam, or a weakness of life not turning out the way you expected? So basically, is it my weakness or is it written in my destiny?
You know, no, I think... that we are the creators of our destiny. And a bit like the last question, at the moment, if I can just step back a bit and just think, I'm an eternal soul, I sit here, but I'm carrying this huge amount of debt because I've done many actions under body consciousness because I lost awareness of who I was. And all that debt sometimes makes me feel hopeless. Sometimes I feel I'm just, you know, dancing to the tune of this negative past, and my vision on myself is so low. And I've pigeonholed myself as a bit of a hopeless case, no good, I don't like myself, all that sort of stuff. And that's what often creates these feelings. But I can come out of these feelings. I can come out of self-dislike, self-hatred, suicidal feelings. But I need to give myself a chance to learn and practice, take company, and be a bit gentle. I'm not going to become perfect overnight. I'm not going to change overnight. But if I start the journey, the healing process kicks in. And I could, you know, I met one guy from France who, you know, his friend, I won't be take a long time, but he told me this story that he'd contemplate and decide to take his own life. And his friend came over that night and told him who he was. And he said that that just opened a whole door in my head. And I began to understand why I'd reached this point. And I'd created this reality because I was ignorant of who I really was. I'd built up this whole misery in my own head about life and how people have treated me. And just knowing who he was, he stepped out. And I knew him for 30 years, and he was an inspirational human being. So he came back from that really dark place.
Beautiful. Mm. Thank you for that. Yeah. Hina is saying, you know, she's really trying to change herself, bringing in the new normal behavior in inverted commas. What she finds is she wants to know that if we distance ourselves, you know, by not participating in the things that you used to do previously, is it okay? We are actually social beings, but I think she's worried about the karmic aspect of it.
I'm not sure why she's distancing herself from...
Because somebody's very, very talkative, and like she's trying to, you know, maybe somebody's gossiping a lot or something. And in the past, yeah, where she would have said, yeah, whatever, now she's trying to sort of withdraw from all that. I think that's what you mean, don't you, Hina? This is our sister from Lagos. We are social beings, but like Charlie said, you know, you can be social everything without participating in the old way of life. For example, if it's gossiping, that's what I think. And it's okay, isn't it? When we change, we have different things that we want to bring in. And that's okay. I think it's okay. If there's anything else you want to add, Charlie?
Yes, I think it's okay. And I think that, you know, I always feel that if you want to change a bit, if there's true love, people accept it. They will accept that you want to change. And, you know, without being rude to people, you can make it known that you basically you want to speak about and participate in positive things and uplifting things. And, you know, when someone comes and starts to get in your ear, this person's terrible, they're like this, you know, somehow you can say to them, you know, I really understand that, but I really feel for me now to keep my spirits up. I want to just think and talk about more positive things. And I really am educating myself to see the value in others. Now, you know, we might be a little bit that maybe that person might take a bit of a backseat, but I think that it's possible to speak your truth with respect. That you want to, there was one person in Australia, she's a BK, and she was working in a big advertising agency, and they were going through that, you know, how they have these big change processes. And everyone, she's a very friendly person, everyone would come into her office, lean on her desk and say, blah, 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 you know, all the gossip. And so she put a sign on her desk, gossip-free zone, you know, like smoke-free zone. And she said it was amazing. People came in, they saw that, and they respected it, and they began to talk about positive things. And she became known as, when you go into this room, you're going to feel a lot better, not just downloading all this rubbish. Because really deeply, I think when you become spiritual, you realize that, you know, why do we gossip? It actually, when we don't feel good about ourselves, when we see other people are not so good, we don't feel so bad. You know, it's a funny human psychology. So, you know, really to speak about good things, to see good things makes a good life and a happy life. Oh, Madhvi, we can't hear you. Madhvi, we can't hear you. You're...
I think you can hear me now because I've muted myself. Sorry about this. Yes, it's just there's a lot of noise going on there, and I was just trying to, you know. Okay, last question. There are lots of lovely points here. Charlie, we want to listen to you 24/7. Someone saying, please come back again soon. I tell you what, the longer the lockdown goes on, the more we will see Brother Charlie. That is definitely, well, I hope so. Charlie, bye, if you don't say no. There's one question about, and we're going to end with this question because I need to make a couple of announcements. Then we will ask Charlie to do a very short meditation commentary for us. I'm sorry, you've all written in now, but like I had said, we will try and I'll send them to Charlie later on, okay? So one last question is about impact. I think Shavara is talking about euthanasia to karma. How do you understand that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fairly delicate question. But, you know, we would understand that really not to sort of terminate my life unnaturally in any way, unless there's absolute sort of extreme discomfort and pain, then, you know, it's possible. But suicide, you know, we wouldn't do, but euthanasia, if people have terminal and there's so much discomfort, we know that we're souls actually, and the soul's just going to continue on. So I think that's the simple answer.
But that's it. And you know, I think, you know, Charlie, really, I've got to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I'm saying it on behalf of the 170 people we've got now, even, you know, that they really appreciated it. And I think you really covered all the different elements so beautifully. So really, thank you very much. Just a quick message to everybody. If your questions haven't been answered, please write to me on email or my WhatsApp, and I will try and collate them and send them to Brother Charlie. The rest of you, I sincerely recommend you look at our flyers and see all the different things, you know, we offer. And you might want to consider doing a Raj Yoga meditation course because it covers a lot of your general questions. One thing about next week, just to let you know, next week we have Brother Yogesh Sharda. He's going to be back for the second part of his original talk, which is Secrets of Self-Esteem. Part two. And lastly, before I pass it back to Brother Charlie, to let you know, please do not write to me now about the recording and do not message me immediately. It takes about 4 to 5 days for that to come through to me. So if you are on the mailing list, you will get it if you're on the groups. If you are not, please email me and I will try and send it to you or add you onto the list. The other thing is following the GDPR, all of you who are on WhatsApp lists now, please wait for my instructions. They will come out on Thursday. You need to enlist. You need to join in, and you need to sign up with the active campaign. All that will come. So please look out for that. Anyone whose question hasn't been covered, I've already written, Jazz. Okay, I've already given you my email address. If you scroll up, I will put it down here once again. But can I just say heartfelt thank you to Charlie? We want you to come back again and again. Well, I want you to move to London. But, of course, I you don't want to hear of it because what's going to happen to all my brothers and sisters in Australia and everywhere else? But, I think you know my feelings right from the start. But, hey, I'm just so happy we have you here with us. Would you like to end with a short meditation and lots of love, blessings to everybody. Be safe, be well. See you next week. Om Shanti.
Thank you so much, everybody. If I can just suggest for these couple of minutes that we put down phones, devices, and just sit very quietly. Bring your attention to the center of the forehead. and visualize I, the eternal soul, a minute spark of life energy. The more I become aware of my permanent self, I begin to experience that life means change. That no matter how much life changes around me, I know my permanent self, the soul, and I always exist. And through the eye of your mind, visualize the lover of the soul, a radiant jewel of light, the supreme, a real living being like me. And just feel the love of God, the love of the divine, entering the core of my being. Just feel this love healing me. The more I feel this eternal love of the ocean of love, I begin to let go all my fears. So thank you again, everybody. So lovely to be with you. And thank you again, Madhvi. You're a wonderful host. Thank you.
Thank you, Baba. Charlie, we hope to see you back soon. Please convey our love to the family in Australia. And everybody, thank you for being here. We are trying our best to share with you as much as we can. So please try not to miss this session. Thank you. Thank you so much for your lovely comments. We'll have to say bye to Brother Charlie because I know it's quite late there now. Thank you so much, Charlie. Really
thank you,
appreciate
Madhvi.
It. And thank you.
My
and
lots
of love to everybody. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Thank you, everybody. Om Shanti. Thank you, Madhvi.
Thank you.